Jake Runnestad is a Minnesota-based composer and conductor of classical music. Most recently, he's been riding a wave as one of today's most sought-after choral composers. His latest recording is called Sing, Wearing the Sky, and it features Joel Rinsema and his ensemble, Cantorai. That's new classical tracks from American Public Media. I'm Julie Amacher. Enjoy. I'm talking with Jake Runnestad about a new recording featuring Joel Rinsema leading Cantorai, and the recording is called Sing, Wearing the Sky. Jake, the first thing I want to ask you is how your life has changed since COVID, and I'm wondering what you might have discovered about yourself that surprises you.
Wow, that's a big question. I think for so many of us, it's been a really frustrating experience. I've had a lot of canceled gigs, a lot of travel that I was supposed to be doing this spring and this summer that, of course, isn't happening. And so it's been a lot of time at home, a lot of time nesting, a lot of time processing, some of that for good and maybe for not so good. But I think that it's been a really important time. And I think for many people to just kind of slow down, dig in, and really consider kind of what is at the heart of it. What is the most meaningful part of what we do? What is most important about how we live our lives? So it's been a lot of meditation on that.
And what have you discovered about that?
I think I'm still working it out. But definitely the joys of cooking, which I love to cook, but I've been doing even more of it now. And especially for, you know, my close friends and family that are part of like the quarantine that I have. That's been a real joy, being able to be outside and enjoying the natural world, reading, I'm doing a lot of research for upcoming projects, which I really love to do, but it's been nice not to have that interrupted by trips. So those things have been really wonderful.
This recording, Sing, Wearing the Sky, was actually created a year ago at this time. And yet when I'm reading about it and listening to it, it seems really profound for this moment in our life. Can you talk a little bit about that?
You know, we never know what's going to happen with our lives. And I think that I'm interested in texts that speak to what it's like to be alive. And yeah, for whatever reason, a lot of these pieces do speak to this experience of not really knowing what's going to happen. There's one track in particular, I think, Live the Questions, which is a setting of a letter by Rilke that challenges us to when there's so much unknown in the world that we don't feel like we need an answer right away, but we live our way into all of those questions, and maybe someday we will arrive at the answer.
This new recording is actually the second album of your music being released in just a year's time. I'm wondering what that means for you.
It's a composer's dream, for sure. Having the album last year with Conspirare and Craig Hella Johnson, which got a Grammy nomination, was more than I ever could have dreamed for. And then to have this album, too, which is all different music from the Conspirare recording, that is so beautifully done. Cantorai is a real gem of the choral world. It's a group of all volunteer singers that are performing at such a high level based in Denver. And so it was an honor to be able to collaborate with them in the recording process. And actually I did conduct one of the pieces, the very last track on the album. And then to be able to present it to the world, especially right now where, you know, all things digital are really how we're absorbing art. And so I'm really pleased that we're able to offer this at this point.
What happens when the composer, you, is right in the session offering ideas to the chorus and the conductor?
I hope I don't scare them too much. I think it's really exciting for everybody involved because I can, in real time, you know, listen to what they're doing and give my thoughts about the depth behind each of the pieces. And, you know, if there's a certain moment that I feel needs to shine a little bit more, or maybe a phrase needs to be stretched so we can bring attention to a certain word or to a harmonic resolution or harmonic tension, that those things can happen in hopes that the music can be even more meaningful for those that hear it. So I think it's a really beautiful thing to collaborate, and it's one of my favorite things in the world. So I had a blast, and I think the choir did too.
I want to just talk about each of the pieces on this new recording. The Secret of the Sea was commissioned by Craig Halla Johnson. Tell me a little bit about the commission.
Yeah, so this was for a large festival chorus, and the premiere was at the Sydney Opera House in Australia. And I thought with that being the setting, you know, this iconic building that's right on the water, I thought, well, it's got to be about the sea. And so I looked all over for various texts that talk about the sea and kind of have a metaphor to a life journey. And so there's this narrative of kind of setting forth on this expedition of life and having, you know, questions and struggles along the way and seeking meaning. It's kind of big gestures and expansive sounds, really trying to evoke what that emotional quality is like if you're standing at the edge of the sea and hearing the waves.
How do you do that? How do you capture the emotional quality of what it's like to be along the shore?
That's the million-dollar question, Julie. I don't know. I think some of it, for example, I use a lot of harmonies that use the whole tone scale. Steps, if you da da dee 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 dee, which you'll often hear in like a dream sequence in a movie or something like that. And for me, that has a certain expansive quality to it. So I use that throughout. And then I use the percussion, the cymbals have, you know, you crash cymbals. But also there's a technique where if you bring the cymbals together, and usually what you'll do is you'll then separate them quickly. But in this case, I have them hold the cymbals together so it kind of rattles a little bit and sounds like a crash of waves on rocks. So those are a couple of the things that I use.
Four different poets are represented in The Secret of the Sea, and it's in three parts, and it is the third part, The Light That Fills the World, that has this gorgeous orchestral transition. And a beautiful text. Could you talk a little bit more about that section?
Yeah, so this text is by an Inuit shaman named Vavnuk. And the story goes that one evening she left her tent and went outside, and this ball of fire or of light entered her, and she began to sing a song about the sea. And that's what the text is here. And there's so much beauty and meaning in finding out, you know, what is the meaning of life? I think that's a big question that we all ask ourselves. And I don't know the answer. But what she speaks to is to live to see the light that fills the world. And I think that that's such a great way of us thinking about life and how we live our lives, that whatever we do, we will strive to see that light in ourselves, in others, in the world around us. And if we do that, I think that life will be worthwhile and will be a beautiful thing.
Thank you. So what do you do when you are asked to write a piece of music that can only be 3 minutes long and it's for a very specific event? What do you do as a composer, Jake Rennestad?
I write Alleluia. You go for a single word that keeps things easy. Yeah, so for Alleluia, it was for a conference performance, an ACDA conference. And yeah, I was limited to 3 minutes. And so I figured, well, if I just do one word, then I don't have to worry about, you know, trying to fit a bunch of text in a certain time frame. So I just took that word and the two ideas of it, where I can think it can be kind of this extroverted, dance-like exaltation quality. Or more of like a meditative quality. And there are many pieces throughout history that have taken both sides to that. And so I thought I'd stick them all in one piece and have kind of a fast, slow, fast structure for that.
The third track on this recording is actually one that others have recorded. Conspirare recorded it, Vacis 8 recorded it. Why has Let My Love Be Heard become so popular?
You know, I think an artist never really knows why people might latch on to one work in particular. But it really is the case. There's something about this piece. A lot of people have taken it on in that manner of using it as a way of remembering or of sharing that feeling of grief and of loss. People just seem to really connect with it. And I think it might be, part of it is this middle section of the piece where the image of the text is that there's someone who is wanting to lift a plea into the air and have it being lifted on the wings of angels and reach, you know, God, or reach the person that they wish that, you know, could hear this plea for love. And so in the middle section, I have the sopranos and altos on these soaring triplets that gradually get higher and higher and higher. And the tenors and basses repeat, "Let my love be heard." What I tried to do was paint that image of these winged beings lifting this plea up into the sky until there's a big climax and it's released into the air. And then when we finally reach that climax in the middle section and they hold it and you think, my gosh, they're still holding this high, high note and they keep holding it. And then they cut off and it gets me every time. It's really, really beautiful.
And I know the text is a prayer that you found in kind of the archives of your grandparents, a little book that they have. Do you ever feel like there's kind of some sort of spiritual guidance when you fall upon a text like that?
Well, that's interesting. I'm not sure. I think that, you know, if we surround ourselves with things that inspire us, that, you know, eventually we will continue to come across, you know, this beauty, and there's so much beauty in the world. And yeah, it was pretty amazing. My grandfather had this collection of four little red books with like gold edges on the pages. And when he passed away, my grandmother gave them to me because she knows that I love poetry. And so I found this poem by Alfred Noyes in one of these little books, and it's the only place that I've been able to find this poem. I can't find it anywhere else. So yeah, there's something amazing and special about that.
The next piece on this new recording is the title track, Sing Wearing the Sky, and it features the women of Cantorai. Tell me about this piece and why you wanted to do something that had this Indian classical undertones or inspiration behind it.
Yeah, so the text of this piece was written by Lala, who was a 14th century Sufi mystic from the Kashmir region of India. And she was an amazing person who wrote so beautifully. And this text is specifically about seeking enlightenment, but becoming comfortable in your own body. Not worrying about what the world puts on you, what the world thinks, but loving yourself for who you are. And when you get to that point of comfort, that, in her words, that you go naked and dance, meaning you feel completely comfortable as you are and you can be yourself. And I just love that so much. I wrote this this piece for the Minnesota Allstate Women's Choir, and I thought that this is a really important message that it would have helped me if I heard this in high school, and I know that that's a common thing for many people, and so I thought it would be a really fitting message for those students. And I also wanted to find in the beginning of the piece a really meditative sound world. So it begins with overtone singing, and there's a violin, and there are glissandi, so we're kind of just shifting all around. Then, when we find that comfort, we get to that place and it becomes a dance. There's a tambourine that's added, it's very rhythmic. At one point, the singers imitate the plucking of a string on the violin. They're doing these long glissandi that add rhythmic interest. Then it kind of ends in this rousing dance. I just tried to find the energy and beauty of what Lala was speaking to.
In the piece, We Can Mend the Sky, you explore deeper color palettes within the voice. Can you talk a little bit about that and how the choir almost becomes three choirs in one?
Sure. We Can Mend the Sky is a setting of a poem that was written by a student in Minneapolis named Warda Muhammad. She was 14 at the time. And the poem is about the experience of someone who's left their home and gone to a new place. Is in this case specifically about many of the wonderful people that we have here in Minneapolis that are from Somalia in Ethiopia. And in this text, Warda talks about this dream world that she wants to live in. You know, in my dream, I saw a world free of violence, hunger, suffering. And then, you know, now awake in this world, I beg, let my dream come true. It's just an extraordinary text. And I pair that with two Somali proverbs. One of them in Somali and one in English. And so the one in Somali, the choir actually sings a fugue, this kind of traditional compositional technique in Somali. There are different sections, and I really try to model it after a narrative journey of someone who is leaving their home and is maybe immigrating to somewhere new, and what that experience is like, and specifically about, you know, the civil war that's plagued Somalia since the early 90s, and it's become a very, very scary thing for many people. And so, you know, I kind of think of my duty as almost like an actor, where I have to assume the character in a piece in an attempt to tell a story through the music and through the words. So that's what I endeavored to do in this piece.
Do you have that text in front of you or available so you could share some of it or no?
Sure, I could recite it for you, have it memorized.
Oh, sure, do that. Would you mind?
Sure. In my dream, I saw a world free of violence, hunger, suffering. Now awake in this world, I beg, let my dream come true. And then in the part in Somali is Naftu Orobaku Aminta, which means if you value your life, run with all your might. And then the last proverb at the end is, if we come together, we can mend a crack in the sky, which I think is such an important message. And so at the end of the piece, I've said it like a refrain. And in performances, you know, there are some groups that have encouraged the audience to sing along. I think it's such a beautiful message that if we can internalize it and live it every day, it really could make the world a better place.
Fear Not, Dear Friend is based on a text by Robert Louis Stevenson, and it was written originally for Seraphic Fire in 2012. Tell me a little bit about this piece. What makes it special?
Yeah, so this is definitely an early piece of mine. And I had kind of started this really wonderful collaborative relationship with Seraphic Fire and wrote this piece for them. And it's really a song of consolation to someone who's struggling in life. And I had someone in my life that I had in mind for it who, you know, was kind of struggling being who they wanted to be and having others accept that. And so that was in my brain as I was writing. But I think of it as kind of a very intimate piece. You know, it's not a piece that you sing outwardly in a really, really strong way, but it's kind of held right in front of your chest as you're singing it.
Proud Music of the Storm is based on a Walt Whitman poem. It was commissioned by the Dallas Symphony Chorus. Why was that? Why did they commission the piece?
So they were celebrating an anniversary year, their 40th anniversary. And so they commissioned this piece, and they toured Europe with it and played with some European orchestras with it. And it was very, very exciting. And what I love about this text is it's celebrating all of the sounds that we hear in our lives. And Whitman goes through this list of, you know, the music of the storm, proud music of the storm.
Proud music of the storm.
And the sound of rushing rivers and lullabies sung by your mother and operas and chants and marches and dances. And he just talks about how all of these things, these sounds we internalize and they become part of us. And then as we live our lives, they inspire us to go forth. And in this case, he says, go forth and write. And I think which is like, and live and create and be a part of the world. I just tried to, you know, the opening is this very kind of fanfare Whitman-like sound. And then the middle section is this lullaby that I tried to make sound like a music box. And what's really fun is Whitman, then he talks about as kind of going into this dream world where he enters into sleep and he's dreaming about his past and these sounds that have been so meaningful to him. And so yeah, I have the music box, and then if you listen closely, you might hear a little homage to Brahms in that section as well.
I Will Lift Mine Eyes is a piece that you wrote back when you were in college. So you must be pretty proud of that piece if it's still out there and you're willing to put it on more and more recordings. Tell me a little bit about this work and the psalm upon which it's based.
Yeah, so this, I think it was my second or third choral piece that I wrote. I had started a little choir of my peers. There were 16 of them that I conducted, and it was an opportunity to practice conducting and to, you know, explore writing new music and hearing it performed. And so I wrote this piece, and I remember I wrote it on a winter break when I was out of school. I was back home in Rockford, Illinois, and I don't remember too much else surrounding the writing of it. It was a while ago now, but I do remember that it seemed to you know, I hate the term writing itself because that assumes that there's like no work involved, but it did seem to come rather quickly, which happens from time to time. And it just felt very, very natural. And I love this idea of, you know, the text is from Psalm 121, and it's looking to the hills or the mountains to find guidance and comfort. And I'm a lover of the natural world. I do a lot of hiking and camping and biking and everything. And so I love that idea of looking to those things for guidance and for beauty. And so this piece, the lines kind of mimic the shapes of the hills and the hues of the sky.
For the last piece, Joel Rinsema asked you to come out of the recording booth and to come into the area where they were recording to conduct the final piece. Why did he do that?
Well, he said that he was struggling wrapping his head around it and his body. So he said, "Jake, come out here and do it." I was like, "Okay, no problem." Wasn't expecting it, but it was really fun to be able to jump in. And this is a piece called Nair Nair, and it is an exploration of fun sounds that one can make with the human voice. So there's everything from kind of nasally sounds to sounds that might sound like a funk guitar to, you know, beatboxing-like sounds and glissandi and all kinds of things you don't traditionally hear in choral music, but I find are so much fun to explore.
Finally, one of the things that I've been thinking a lot about as I think about choruses and choral music is there's a lot of concern right now in the choral world about when we might be able to reunite and safely sing together. And I'm wondering what thoughts you have about that.
I think we're all really frustrated and we're all really missing that human connection. We see these virtual choirs, which are, you know, great ways to showcase something that people can work together on, but it's not choir. It's not singing together. It's just not the same thing as being in the same room and having that feeling of resonating with people around you. So, you know, I'm along with everybody else just really missing it and hoping that it comes soon. But also knowing that in the grand scheme of things, patience is better than, you know, to be spreading and causing problems if we jump in too soon. So I know that we just need to hang on. We need to live into these questions and wait until we can kind of be fully there and healthy and making music again. But I hope that it comes as soon as possible.
It's a new recording called Sing, Wearing the Sky, and it's music of Jake Runnestad performed by Cantarai. You can help New Classical Tracks reach more people. Take a moment to rate and review us on your podcasting app. It really does help new people find the show. Thanks to Valerie Kaler for producing this edition of New Classical Tracks from American Public Media. I'm Julie Amacher.